Welcome to this episode of the Payments Show podcast. My name is Satwant Phul, and today I will be speaking to Alexander Busaroff, who is the co-founder and CEO of Tile. Tile is an extremely innovative platform to deliver safe consumer products to the market using the Tile digital token. Before we start, I'd like to ask for a quick favor. If you enjoy this episode, please leave a review on iTunes after you finish listening and subscribe to The Payments Show on your favorite podcast app. Enjoy the episode. Alex, welcome to the show.
Hi, Sat. Thank you for the invitation. Glad to be here.
It's great to have you on. Really looking forward to our conversation. I wanted to start by giving you a quick intro and explain why I got in touch with you, and then we'll take it from there. So Alex is the co-founder of Tile, which is a digital token for safe consumer products. And the solution allows consumers to securely verify a product's authenticity by scanning a special NFC label. And the added benefit, which makes this solution really cool, is that every time a customer scans a Tile, it's actually a cryptocurrency-based token. And that means that the customers can earn those tokens and then use them to purchase goods and services. So hopefully that's an accurate explanation of the company in a nutshell.
Very good explanation. Thank you.
Excellent. So really excited to have this discussion and find out what it's all about. And before we get started, please introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you got involved with the crypto and payment space. And then we'll move on to the details in a moment.
So I'm Alex. I'm co-founder and CEO of Tile, as you rightly mentioned. We are a company based in China. Right now, I'm actually in Shanghai.
Okay.
We're a growing startup with about 50,000 users as of now, with some operations in Japan, Australia, Europe, as well as Singapore. Speaking about myself and my background, I studied philosophy and economics in London. Then I spent a few years in consulting, and then ended up with China, working along with my old friend from university who also studied philosophy with me.
Nice. I'm sure that can take a podcast of a couple of hours alone. So maybe we'll do another.
Maybe with a drink.
Yeah, we'll do another episode on philosophy. Absolutely. I'd like to move on to understand why you created Tile, and your mission is to create an ecosystem of authentic products. So if you could tell us a bit about that, that would be great.
It all started when I was already in China, and it all started with a personal problem. So I was in Hangzhou. It's one of the pretty big cities in China. It's the hometown of Alibaba. And I was buying whiskey at a supermarket. It's a well-known chain, very well-known chain globally. And buying whiskey, I was looking at all the selection. I was thinking, well, it's kind of scary because I knew that there was a high chance of whatever I buy is going to be fake and I'm going to be sick from it. And you still pay the full price. It's not kind of a a low price knockoff kind of thing. You still pay the full price, and you still there's a high chance of being sick, so it makes you worried. And I realized that it's kind of 21st century, and there should be a solution to it. So then I started talking to my co-founder, who's been an old friend, and we started discussing different ideas, and we realized that there must be a solution. So that's how it all started with an actual problem. Interestingly enough, when we decided to actually set up the company, we decided to celebrate. And he bought a bottle of whiskey at another chain, also pretty good brand of whiskey. We drank it. It wasn't a very big bottle, just to be clear, and we didn't drink anything else.
Yeah.
But we were very, very, very sick. That stuff was completely fake, and it was bad. We were kind of considering going to the hospital. It was kind of that bad.
All right.
So the start of the company was actually marked with experience of the problem, the very problem that we were starting to solve.
I didn't realize it was such a bad problem.
It's you kind of feel it. I remember my first experience in Hangzhou. I came and spent a bit of time at university, Zhejiang University in Hangzhou. And when I was speaking to some of the fellow students, when they were describing places to go, the way that they would describe it would be normally around what kind of a place it is and whether the drinks are real or fake. So that distinction was kind of a normal thing to include into the description. Now, people and adults and alcohol is one thing, but when I was speaking to Yaz, my co-founder, one of the first things he said was, well, you know, Alex, you know, there's alcohol and you, and there is things like things for babies, and there are things like, you know, pharma and cosmetics. So things that are a lot more sensitive in terms of being authentic, in terms of being good quality. And we realized that the problem is actually much bigger than what we personally felt.
Yeah, actually, that you've touched on it a little bit. And I was actually going to ask, you know, what types of products, in addition to, say, food? So you mentioned pharmaceuticals, but I saw on your, again, on your website, there's other products such as fashion, which I didn't really think about, but makes sense as there's so many luxury brands out there that want to protect their brand, etc. So yeah, I mean, what kind of ecosystem of authentic products are you thinking of, maybe, if we look out into the future a bit?
So right now, we operate a marketplace with almost 500 SKUs. So 500 products, different items. And it's mostly around baby-related things. So from infant formula to baby food to things like baby bottles, stuff like that. Stuff that you definitely don't want to be fake. Then there is cosmetics, food supplements, and other personal care products. So essentially, it's everything where you as consumer really want to make sure that it's authentic. The luxury brands is not an initial target for us. Because in many cases, or maybe even in most cases, if you buy a luxury brand at a very low price, it's actually an kind of an honest transaction there. Because you know it's fake, the seller knows it's fake, no one is fooling anyone. So there's no problem to solve per se. I mean, the brand might be not happy that it's actually happening, but at the same time, the consumer who's buying, you know, a big luxury brand for $20 probably would not buy the same brand for the real price.
Yeah. And you're not going to end up in hospital either.
Exactly.
So you mentioned you've got a lot of products right now and expanding all the time, I'm assuming. And what markets are you in at the moment? Mainly is it's China, a sort of Asia region at the moment only?
So it depends how you define the market. So in terms of the consumers, the people who buy the products is China. Okay. So out of all of our consumers, there's over 80% actually women, also driven by the selection of the products that we've currently got. And many of them are actually in second, third, and fourth tier cities. So not in the, you know, four biggest cities in China. Also due to the fact that the access to the products where you can be sure that it's authentic is a bit more limited. It's kind of easier to buy things in Shanghai than if you go to a smaller city like Hefei or Jiaxing.
Sure.
So that's the consumer side. On the corporate side, though, we actually sell almost all of our products are imported. And they're important from Japan, Australia, New Zealand, and some products are coming from Germany and a few other places. So on the corporate side, it's actually quite international already. And we're looking forward to tapping more into the corporate partners in the US and also in Korea.
If a business wanted to sign up to this ecosystem, how does that work from start to end? What's the process and is it quite straightforward? And yeah, what's the journey for a business that are looking into this solution?
So I think it's important to understand that we're building a whole ecosystem, and there's the marketplace solution for anti-counterfeiting technology. And as one of the next steps, we're going to be building this up into, and that's going to be the biggest part of the business, a payment solution. So as of right now, even a few months ago, the easiest way to join the ecosystem would be to join the marketplace. And that would be to take the products, all of your products or some of your products, label them with our anti-counterfeiting solution and start selling them through our marketplace. That's probably the easiest barrier for the business to join us in China. And there's quite a few benefits with that already, even though it's the barrier is quite low. The benefits would not mostly be around making sure that your products are authentic and also being able to prove to the consumer that your products are authentic, which is, as you can imagine, a pretty big thing. But also there's quite a lot of consumer data that we managed to show to the brands to enable their marketing efforts. Now, the next step, and that's what we're actively working on right now, we call it Project X. We're still coming up with a proper name for this part of the product, but this is going to be more around just understanding the consumer. So right now, all of the interactions between the products and the consumers were around the authenticating the product. Now we're going to start talking more to the consumer and do things like the customized surveys and sentiment analysis and things like that, where the interaction is between the brand and the consumer, not necessarily through the product. It could be a more direct interaction. And this will enable brands to make better products. This will enable brands to market the products in a more targeted way to the right people at the right time and things like that. And this will also be using the Tile token the way that it's used right now just for authentication. We're extending it to a broader range of brand to consumer interaction, which did not necessarily involve the product right away. And as a so that's something that is going to be pretty easy to join. So the brands could just go to our website, create an account. It will take a couple of minutes, and already they could already put together a quick survey, which would be very targeted and which would be much higher quality than many of the online surveys out there, which are infested with bots and people who are professional at taking surveys. Yeah. For us, we look at the data, which is not just reported. We look at the actual behavior data. So if the person is saying that there's basically a difference between a person saying that they buy infant formula and the person actually buying it, and we're able to see the latter, so we can actually target the questions and the surveys to the real people who have the real interaction with the brand through us. And the next stage will be, and I'm sure we'll touch on this quite a bit more later, when we grow into more of a payment ecosystem. Right now, I'll just put it very briefly. I believe that to be a strong payment solution, what you need is not an easy protocol. What you need is scale. And there's always a bit of a chicken and egg problem. So for us, we were solving this through creating the marketplace and the marketing service that I was talking about first, that enables us to grow. And once we get to 500,000, 2 million users, that's going to be a very valuable solution to join for anyone who wants to accept payments, especially payments from the Chinese tourists. So when we spoke to potential partners in Singapore, in Japan, and Korea, basically anywhere where Chinese tourists go, the first question that they always ask is not about the fees and not about the speed of the payment and things like that. The first question that they ask is, how many more users, how many more customers is it going to bring to me? So right now we've got around 50,000 people participating in the ecosystem, and the number I think is still quite small to be a very strong proposition for, let's say, a taxi company in Singapore. But once it gets to 500,000, 2 million, I think this is where it's going to be a no-brainer for a lot of the merchants around Asia.
To understand where you're at right now, the cryptocurrency tokens, they exist, right?
They exist. They exist. They exist in the same way that you know, the 50,000 people who use them regularly. It's so I said that 50,000 is not that big, but you know, it's kind of it's more so like a fully filled Wembley Stadium. Wembley, I think, is around 70,000, right? So I think we'll get there in a few months. So it's already a sizable number of people. But we need to get the bigger scale so that it's a complete no-brainer. And then it's going to be very easy to sell to any merchant anywhere in Asia.
Fantastic. And if we can talk about the solution in a bit more detail, I mean, obviously it's to prevent counterfeiting, I mean, at a high level, but can you talk a little bit more perhaps in the detail of how that authenticity is ensured and the security of the system perhaps for businesses that are potentially interested in this?
So I spoke about two kinds of authenticity. I think it's important to distinguish the two. One was the authenticity of a physical item. And the second kind of authenticity I was talking about was the authenticity of the interaction. So that's something completely different. On the first one, we use NFC. So NFC is near field communication. It's a type of RFID labels. We put them on the product. And this is our in-house developed technology. We protect it in different ways. So there's a physical and digital protection, to speak broadly. And physical protection basically basically ensures that you cannot just take off the label, put it on a different product. And you can also not, you cannot open the packaging or use the product in a way that would not damage the label. So one authentic product, one label, that's physical. And on the digital level, we have a system where with every scan or every interaction with that label, the date on the label changes. So it works in a similar way as Google Authenticator, the number changes with every 30 seconds, I think. So the idea is that if someone kind of looks at it, and then if they try to use it, then it's going to be too late by the time. So kind of similar idea here. If a counterfeiter tries to clone the code and tries to create a fake item with the same label, then it's going to be too late because the it's already been used by the consumer, similar kind of thing. So that's on the physical products. Then there's the authenticity of the interactions. And here, so this is the example I was talking about with, let's say, a survey. Traditionally, the survey companies, they just employ, either employ a number of people through online, and it's all self-reported. And then people kind of want to make money on the other side and to have more of their service to fill in. They just say that, yeah, I consume everything, and, you know, I'm super rich, and you know what they know what kind of answers to give to make sure that they get paid more and they get more of their service, right? So as a brand, you definitely don't want that. So we're building a much more authentic interactions when we don't just ask people, we look at their actual behavior. What is it that they actually buying? We look at to determine their age. We don't ask them, because to make a purchase from the marketplace, to actually submit their ID, and the ID actually has the birth date, and it's in a very compliant way. We just look at that birth date, and we just know how old they are. We don't sell that data per se. It's personal data. You cannot sell. There's very strict rules around that. But we can target the right surveys and the right interactions to those people in an authentic way, not just self-reported way.
Yeah, that's something I didn't even think of. Although I suppose I've come across it in another sense, where financial companies are doing things like analyzing how quickly you apply for a loan, and they can realize that, well, if you get on the website and apply for a loan in, you know, 1 minute, that might be a fraudster. Whereas if you're actually taking out a loan, you're going to think, can you pay it? It might take you half an hour, an hour on the website, right?
So yeah, and that completely makes sense. It's just for financial companies, that's a very clear KPI. The amount of fraud that may be happening, the amount of money that they could be losing is crazy. That's why they made that step of making sure that whatever application they get that's actually authentic data. Now, for the marketing and FMCG, is probably not as advanced or not as advanced yet. And a poor surveys with self-reported data often just ends up with very low ROI on the marketing spending, and it's like, well, that's life, it's a difficult market, China is tough, that's what it doesn't have to be. That data can be authentic, and they can do much better.
Before I move on to the next question, I want to make sure that I've got the marketplace correct in my head. So when, for the listeners, so it's just like a marketplace like eBay or whatever, right? You go to the Tile marketplace, and there's a whole bunch of authenticated, secure product, verified products there. Yeah. Okay. And so that's, so if it's in China, is that on their local sort of WeChat and things like that, or is there websites for the marketplace?
So because it's in China, we've built it within WeChat. 99% of our potential users, they all have WeChat. There's payment systems integrated. It's just easy for them. Yep. So they don't need to download anything else. They don't need to create a separate login. So we've built it within WeChat.
Excellent. I know you mentioned your secret project X earlier, but are there any customer or case studies you can talk about? Maybe one or two which have gone really well?
Not yet. So that one, the case studies and the work with the corporates on this project X that I mentioned, they're only starting. We already, and I was surprised. I didn't think it would be going so well. I was surprised when we started talking to the heads of marketing from different FMCG companies, the feedback was very, very good. So now for, I wouldn't say it's a burden, but it's kind of a pretty high responsibility on us to make sure that we deliver the good product and deliver it quickly. Because now we have a line of marketeers who are like, hey, I want to use that. And people often don't realize the the amount of money that goes into marketing in FMCG. So let me ask you, you do you have much experience with FMCG, with, you know, any marketing, manufacturing FMCG?
Well, I mean, as a sales rep in the IT industry, I've dealt with companies, but I don't know, what level of depth are you looking at?
So let me ask you a simple question. Just take a guess. So within FMCG, especially the industries that I mentioned, right, from the baby to cosmetics and supplements,
yeah,
out of all these sales, what do you think is the share that goes back into marketing?
The share of the revenue effectively that goes into marketing that stuff? Maybe 10 to 20% perhaps?
So for cheaper products, it could be 10 to 20, but generally it's between 20 and 30.
Wow, that's quite significant.
Yeah. So that's the kind of budgets that we're talking about when we talk about marketing these products. And right now, a lot of that money can be spent ineffectively, because the input, the data that marketeers get is often not great. So yeah, this is what we're essentially trying to solve with Project X.
I saw something on your website called the Academy. Mm-hmm. Is that for businesses to onboard and learn how to get involved in the ecosystem? I just wanted you to talk about that a little bit.
No. That's more of the crypto side of the crypto community. And the Academy is built for people within the community to understand what Tile does and how it works and where it stands. So it's okay. Much more of an educational tool for anyone who's involved with more of the trading of the token rather than businesses.
Okay. Now, one other thing I wanted to talk about, and it probably links into what you said about you've been surprised that FMCG companies are really interested. What are the weaknesses of existing solutions, if there are any, that are even close or trying to do something that you're doing? Can you talk about that?
Sorry, I didn't quite understand the question. So,
I'm assuming there must be some kind of competitor to what you're doing in terms of trying to make sure that products are genuine and authentic. Mm-hmm. So what are the weaknesses of those existing solutions have you found?
Okay, so if we're talking about the product authenticity, let me just tell you kind of one of the first things that we did when we decided to work on this was to find some of the experts in the anti-counterfeiting industry. And to be honest, when I spoke to those people, I thought that I was speaking to someone from 18th century. Wow. People were talking about the holograms and how one hologram is better than the other, you know, and it was a few years ago, I must say. It was 5-6 years ago, but still, you know, you get the feeling. Now this industry has progressed quite a bit, but I still see people talking about unique QR codes. So I've had conversations with quite a few people when they say, this is an anti-counterfeiting technology, we use unique QR codes. And my immediate challenge would be, well, but you know, unique doesn't mean it cannot be cloned. A QR code is a collection of dots. You take one, you make a copy, and then, you know, it's a perfect copy. In one of our marketing presentations, we actually just show this point very vividly. We have a QR code, an actual QR code from an actual product. We have it, you know, on one side of the slide, and on the other side of the slide, we have the same QR code on a donkey. So if you scan that QR code, it still says that it's infant formula by this brand, you know?
Yeah.
So when people see it on a donkey, they kind of get it. So that's one problem. A lot of the solutions there, they're not really that secure. And then there's the other extreme of the solutions, which are completely unusable by the consumers. Some of the solutions, or maybe they're just built for a different purpose, right? So some of the solutions, they require an additional device. So if you need an additional special device to authenticate your products, that's kind of too much. Right, when you go to Tesco or anywhere else, you buy your stuff, you're not going to carry a special device to authenticate products. You want to do it with something that you've got, you know, your eyes, your hands, your mobile phone. So for us, we just use a mobile phone.
Yeah, fantastic. What was your biggest challenge in getting Tile to where it is now?
It's a pretty entrepreneurial journey. There's challenges along the way, and there's always a new one. I think one of the biggest ones was, I think this is where a lot of anti-counterfeiting company actually, you know, they hit the roadblock, is in realizing that the problem is more on the consumer side and a bit less on the company side. So when you just speak to companies, some companies, you know, care enough about this issue to speak to you, but not enough to really implement the strong solution because they're busy, you know, and it's a pretty big change for any company to add something to their products. We were hitting this roadblock just like anyone else. And I see a lot of the competing companies hitting that roadblock right now as well. And what we did at that time was we realized, well, if it's more about the consumer and the consumer are the ones who care more, then let's turn it around. So that's why we turned it from being a B2B business when we were selling the technology to being a B2C business when we started building the marketplace. And then we realized that this is extendable much further from just the authenticity of the products to the authenticity of the relationships, which kind of completes the circles with the companies. And as the next step, we saw this opportunity to grow into a big payment system.
Fantastic. What do you think will be the challenges around the payment side? I know you said absolutely that the number of people is key, right?
To be honest, I think compared to having the sufficient scale, all the other challenges are not going to be too big. Basically, you see, we're going to be happy to provide the solution. Now, it's going to boil down to whether the merchant actually wants to use the solution. And for the merchant, as long as it brings them new customers, they're going to be willing to overcome barriers.
Yeah.
So if using the solution will mean that they need to spend, you know, a day of work or a week of work, as long as there's sufficient benefit in terms of the number of new customers that they're going to be getting, they'll do it. So that's why I'm not too focused on, you know, having a particular protocol, making it very easy for the merchants or things like that. Yep. We will work on that later on. But right now, it's really all about the scale. That's what I really believe in. And I think this is the kind of a problem that the industry of the payments and a lot of people in crypto as well are facing, that there's this we'll build it and they will come mentality. And it's just not how things work in the real world.
Yeah,
I've seen so many people being burnt with it, actually, from previous crisis and the real estate industry. I saw it. Now I see it in crypto. A lot of the companies, a lot of the entrepreneurs, they think, well, you know, we're going to build it and surely, you know, it's such a big problem, people will use it. Well, not really. Sometimes it's, you know, it may be a big problem, but not acute enough for people to care. Things like that. And I think once the mentality will change, this is when the solutions that are being built will be a lot more relevant to the actual problems.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, it's going to be quite hard to avoid this one in terms of what's happening right now at time of recording. Obviously, the coronavirus is having a big impact worldwide. I normally ask guests around macro stuff like politics. So we've got a lot of civil unrest happening. If we forget the virus, just generally, it was already happening anyway, you know. Lots of things going around with politics, the US elections of this year. We've had Brexit, trade wars, and now we've got the coronavirus. So I don't know whether you had any thoughts from the business angle on your experience there and how it might have an impact.
From the business angle, it's going to be tough, especially for small businesses. It's going to be tough because a lot of revenue, I'm obviously it depends on the industry, but for especially the service industries, which are losing revenues right now, they're going to lose 15 to 20% of the revenues at least, right? It's, you know, a couple of months that they're not going to be working properly. And depending on their margins, it may be very, very difficult for them to deal with it. So, you know, that's when you need to tighten your belt and kind of try to make sure that you get through. I've seen my friends posting on Facebook things like, hey, you know, if you like a service or if you like, you know, restaurants or a cafe, as a user, as a consumer, make sure that you actually keep ordering from them. And I think maybe, and we, because we as consumers, we actually care that these businesses, they actually stay there because we enjoy their services, we enjoy their food, etc. So I think maybe a small advice for businesses, don't be afraid to rely on your customers a bit more during these tough times and just tell them that, you know, ask them, tell them that, look, guys, help us. If you don't order, you know, delivery from us in these tough times, we're gonna close, and you know, there's gonna be someone else. Maybe you will like them, maybe not.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. Then I think it's more of a view for the people. I'm So I'm in China right now. We went through this wave of coronavirus and social distancing and staying at home a bit earlier than the rest of the world. It is quite scary. It is quite scary when you see the curve that keeps going up. So for me, when I was looking at the numbers, I was looking always looking at the number of new cases per day. And especially if that number is increasing or decreasing. So that's the second derivative of the number of actual cases.
Okay.
And I was just waiting for that number to start going down. So once it started going down, I realized that, well, you know, it's improving. The total number was still growing, and that's fine. As long as the number of new cases starts to decrease, then it starts getting better. And I think as long as people do take the sufficient measures, it will start to decrease. My view is it's better to overdo it a little bit in terms of the distance, in terms of the measure, but do it early on, than to deal with a much bigger problem. Unfortunately, I see too many people in Europe, for example, that are not taking it seriously enough. And I think people just don't realize that there's already quite a few people in the ICU. There's already quite a few people who are sick with pretty difficult effects that, you know, they're just not seeing it, so they don't feel that it's significant enough.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's good news that, you've got over the worst of it where you are. So
it does get better, right? Yeah. It's like any crisis. It's kind of scary when things are going bad, but they do start recovering. So as long as you just make sure that you work towards that recovery, things will get better. Just, it's one of those things maybe where you need to have a little bit of faith.
Yes, definitely. I agree with that. So almost at the end, before I go into my last set of questions, they tend to be a bit lighter. Do you feel that I've missed something that you think is very important to get across to the listeners, who are running businesses and or their sales directors or whatever, looking after their e-commerce operations?
I think just what I was just saying about the advice during the tough times, because I think that's going to be something that's going to affect pretty much everyone. Make sure that you cut any fat, tighten up the belts, and make sure you're able to rely on your consumers. These people really care about you. So just make sure that you take their help as well.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay. So we'll go on to the last few questions. What are your company's biggest goals right now? And have you got any new services that are coming along this year?
So one of the biggest goals was and still is about growth. Now, because we had a bit of a slow 6 to 8 weeks, reaching the numbers that we wanted is going to be harder. But we wanted to reach 1 million users by the end of the year, which is 20x what it is right now. But one, we saw that the growth was increasing on one hand. And on the other hand, with Project X, we're actually significantly lowering the barrier for entry of both the corporate clients and the users into the whole ecosystem. Right now, for the user to enter in the ecosystem, they basically need to make a purchase. Whereas with the Project X, you'll be able to join the ecosystem with answering a few questions and sharing things with friends. So you don't even need to spend any money.
Great.
That's a much lower barrier, as you know, in any consumer business. If something is free, it's just easier to grow.
Definitely.
So I'm because we're lowering this barrier to entry, I still believe we should be able to reach that 1 million users. But we're yet to see where the growth will be leading us. And one of the quite immediate things that I'm excited about is the work that we're doing with one of the big department stores in Asia. They're in Japan, to be a bit more specific. And they've always enjoyed a big flow of consumers from China. So people go to buy things in that department store. But the problem that they were facing was that once they shop at the department store, they're going to go back to China, they'll lose the connection.
Yeah.
So they also, being Japanese and having all high quality everything, they really want to make sure that whatever associated with them is authentic, and this is how we're going to build the relationship. So they decided to extend their department store into China through us. So essentially, they're building a dedicated zone within our marketplace with the products from that department store that the Chinese consumers will be able to purchase when they're back in China. So it's kind of an extension, a virtual extension or online extension of the department store.
Like an eBay branded store for different brands, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Fantastic.
It's just that for a lot of the stuff is going to be exclusive to us. So it's a wonderful deal for us. And the next step for us will be to do more on the payment integration, that the consumers who receive the tiles here in China, they'd be able to go and spend them in Japan. And then when they spend something in Japan, they can get some of the rebates in tiles. And when they go back to China, they can spend them as well. So it's essentially, this is the payment case starts to grow a bit more. And yeah, when the economies and the merchants are kind of a bit more integrated through our tiles.
That sounds really exciting. I have to get you back on next year to see how that goes.
Thank you.
So what are your payments predictions for this year for the industry? And are there any events or conferences that people can meet you at?
To be honest, I don't really go to put too many conferences or events. I wish I could, but there's just so many things going on. And I'm always, you know, when I have to choose between being at a conference or spending a bit more time with the users or with the team on developing something, I just tend to choose the latter.
Yeah, yeah. No, so it's,
that being said, I'm in Shanghai, and it's a big city. A lot of people travel through Shanghai. I'm very, very open to meet. You know, people can contact me on LinkedIn. It's very easy to find, etc.
Excellent.
And that being said, I don't think there's going to be too many conferences in the next few months. At least it doesn't look like that, right? And in terms of the predictions, well, I think it's going to be a good year for all the digital payments. Even people who used to go to a local store and paying in cash, the current situation is kind of forcing them to start taking more of delivery. And that often means actual digital payment. So this is the kind of areas that I think are going to do quite well. You know, it seems like similar to all the online communications. I've recently seen the share price of Zoom went 3x in the last 3 months. And that all kind of makes sense, right? We're all on the same line.
Well, I read, it's funny you say that. I read a newspaper headline yesterday that said that Zoom is now worth more than all of the US airlines combined, the market cap. I haven't checked it, but that was a pretty big headline, I thought.
I still remember the one of the cases from my economics class back in university when they were asking, well, airlines and online communication, is it a substitute or is it complementary? I thought it was a substitute, but my professor thought it was complementary goods. We didn't agree on that, let's say.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Alex. That was a great learning exercise for me in terms of what you guys are doing. You know, wish you the best of success in your growth plans, and would love to have you back in future.
Thank you very much, Seth. It's pleasure to speak to you, and hope we'll be in touch, and would love to speak again sometime in the future.
Definitely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to leave a review on iTunes and subscribe to The Payments Show on your favorite podcast app. If you would like to accept payments faster in your company, please head over to digitalmoneylab.com, where you can find more information. Thanks for listening, and see you in the next episode.